Welcome to PR After Hours, your twice weekly cocktail of business, PR, and marketing tips hosted by me, Alex Greenwood. Every week, we bring you virtual happy hours featuring business advice from entrepreneurs and leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. We're going to get started in just a moment, so stick with us.
This is Julie Cortez, freelance rock star, coming at you. You are listening to PR After Hours.
You know, I have podcasted off and on since 2006, and I've had good shows. I've had okay shows. I've had shows that have had up in the tens of thousands of downloads. I've had shows that, let's just say, weren't in the tens of thousands. But I've had a good degree of success in that I've met lots of interesting people, whether it be in this show, PR After Hours, where I've met a lot of entrepreneurs, PR people, marketing folks, business owners, that kind of thing, or Mysterious Goings On, my other show, where I interview a lot of writers and creative people. So I've had a lot of, I would call that kind of a different kind of capital that I've earned with these shows. However, it would be nice if I could actually figure out how to monetize my podcasting as a host and as a guest. And if you're listening to this show, I have to wonder that you probably don't feel the same way, which is the main reason why I'm excited to welcome our guest today, Phil Pelluccia. He is helping business owners level up using their story to gain market share, media coverage, and funding introductions. He's a former football player, a professional. And when I say football, Americans, we're talking what we would call soccer in Great Britain. He was both a coach and a player. And he had this wonderful career there. And then he moved on where he's had podcasting networks. And he's done all kinds of great stuff. And we're going to listen to Phil today. Give us a few tips on perhaps how to make podcasting a little more worth your while. Phil, welcome to the virtual lounge.
Thanks for having me. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think so. Okay, what am I doing wrong, Phil? No, I'm just kidding. Here's what I want. So I think it'd be beneficial, and I didn't even give the name of your company because I want you to give it. But I if you would briefly tell us about the name of your company.
So I own an organization called Billionaires in Boxes. We're a business broadcast network. Everyone always wants to know where that name came from. And I imagine the audience are listening thinking, what on earth is this guy going on about? But it was originally a joke, believe it or not, which is another reason I like it. I like it for two reasons. I think everybody listening to this as a business owner or working in PR will appreciate both of these. Number one, the fact that it's my sense of humor wrapped into my business name, I enjoy that. It makes me smile, right? The second thing I like about it is the fact that everybody has an opinion on it. Everybody has an opinion on the name Billionaires in Boxes. I've never had a brand name before where people feel compelled to say, here's what your brand means to me. And it's like, oh, that's quite cool. I like that. But no, it was a joke. I mean, we got picked up. We had a podcast series. That was then a radio series. And then we got picked up for our first television series and we needed a name for the show, and everything I suggested, like, they absolutely hated. And I mean, like, they detested it. Like, I was almost banned from making any more suggestions about the name of my own show. And I did what most British people do. And I started taking the piss. Sorry if you have to beat that out. I was just like joking around, like, oh, screw it. So I was like, how about Billionaires in Boxes? Because I grow global empires from home and I rarely put on pants. And they were like, oh, we really like that. And I was like, it was a joke. And it became so popular that people started to know me as the Billionaires in Boxes guy before they even knew my name. In fact, most people will talk to us about our very first TV commercial in Southern Africa, which was us walking down the town hall steps in Pretoria in a suit jacket, shirt, tie, socks, shoes, and boxer shorts. And it was us walking down the steps. Like, that was how we announced the show. And people always talk to me about that. They're like, do you still do that? And I was like, it wasn't like an everyday thing. Like, it was an advert thing. Like, I just forgot to wear my trousers one day and I was like, screw it. I kind of like this look.
Well, yeah, which is why I said, you know, you would briefly talk about boxers. And I was going to also, my other joke I had ready was, well, let me be the American unit for your company. And I'll be, billionaires in briefs, because that's typically what I wear. Enough of that underwear talk. The important thing is, folks, if you're listening carefully, is that this gentleman has made podcasting more than just a side hustle. It's become your whole deal. You've branched out to television, radio, the whole thing. Mm. So I guess you would probably agree with me that podcasting's not going anywhere. It's not some kind of little fad or anything.
Oh no. In fact, if you look at what's going on, I mean, particularly outside of the US as well. I mean, the US, as per usual, is the most active market, right? And then there's a couple of places that kind of come a second best. Like the UK is pretty big, and you know, but like, I think people would be surprised to recognize the level of opportunity. So one of the examples I give it to people is, if you had a time machine and could go back and invent the iPhone, you'd do it, right? Because it'd make you an absolute fortune. Well, mm-hmm. You do have a time machine. It's called international business, because Africa, for example, the number of podcasters last year in Africa doubled, but they're still 10 years behind the US market. So if you want to know what it's like to travel back in time as a business model that works, it's look at who was making money 10 years ago in the American market. Look at who's making money today and what they're doing, and then go and apply that back into additional markets. It's an incredible way of cleaning up. And actually, that's before we even talk about the whole international credibility and domestic dominance thing, which is something that I've played with for years, which is, you know, if you're recognized as the best in the world at what you do globally, your domestic market become lucky to have you. Your prices become far more attractive as far as you're concerned. Competition seems to just fall by the wayside, because it's like, okay, there's three SEO agencies in the space of a mile that do what I do, but I'm the one that's known worldwide.
Right. Right. Well, evidently. Well, let me ask you just a kind of a quick couple of pre-questions before we get into some of your tips on monetization. Mm-hmm. I get this a lot, Phil, and I suspect your answers are going to be far better than mine typically are. And I have people who, small to mid-sized businesses or brands, and they're asking me, they say, Alex, you do all this podcasting and all that stuff. Do I need to do this? It's the same question I got 10 years ago, Phil, when they were asking me this Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn thing. Mm. Do I need to do this? I'm getting the exact same look on the face, which is a vague form of constipation and consternation. It's kind of in between.
Yeah,
and I think they're almost begging me to say, no, you do not need to do this. So what do you answer to that question?
You know what that is? The reason that they're doing that is that they see it as a waste of time. Like, they don't want to waste time. And that, nobody wants to waste time. I get that, right? But the reality is that even most podcasters are wasting their time. I mean, for the past 3 years, you know, I've been doing this for 6 years, teaching it for 6 years now. I've been doing it for myself for like almost 13, 14 years at this point, but I've been teaching it for six. And the last three, we've been voted number one in the world for showing people how to monetize this. But let me tell you, and I would like to say that the 5-6% are all mine. They're not, but about 5-6% of the market are actually monetizing podcasting. And what they are doing, I mean, other than the likes of Joe Rogan and stuff, and how he did it, he did it almost like the old school way, which is, you know, data is valuable. So if you build up hundreds of thousands or millions of people following you, that's going to be valuable no matter what, because there will always be a sponsor or an advertiser who wants to position themselves in front of that audience. But well, how do you make money from podcasts if you've not got thousands of listeners, or if you have no intention of becoming like a social media influencer and having yourself out there all the time? And most people struggle with that answer. And it's like most things in life. The answer to that question is probably simpler than most people realize, which is the power of podcasting is not in the audience. That's just an incredible byproduct. The power of podcasting is in the relationship building you do with your guest or host, right? So I have a rule, which if you're guest appearing, for example, which is incredibly easy to get guest appearances these days. Every man and his dog's being invited onto podcasts. There's tons of these podcast sites, matchmaker.fm, podbooker.com. There's a millions of them, right? You just go register and people will invite you onto a podcast. But be forewarned, that's how you end up talking to me 2 years' time saying, I've done hundreds of interviews and made no money. What am I doing wrong? And the answer is, you're not positioning it in front of the three Ps. So the three Ps in my world are purchaser, partner, or promoter. Are they going to buy your stuff? Are they going to recommend and introduce you to people who are going to buy your stuff? Or are they going to give you a stage or a platform to introduce you to more of the first two? If the answer is no to all of those P's, don't do it. Now you're just doing it for vanity metrics. Now you're wasting your time.
Man, this is interesting. I can only talk about my own experience if I could, not trying to be vain here, but I typically turn down opportunities, and it's because I am busy. I have a lot going on. And I'm also in the process of evaluating both of my shows about whether I'm going to continue them as is, because I believe the other show I do has been around since 2016, and it's more of a labor of love. This show has been around 2 years in January. So I have to decide if those three P's are working for me in any way, shape, or form. But I sure. noticed, though, that when I get invited on a lot of podcasts, I hate to be kind of jerky with people, and I'm not rude or anything, but I just really don't have time.
And maybe there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, no, but maybe that's a nice way of me just saying, I checked out the show. It looks kind of professionally done. The sound quality is crap. I don't have time for that, I guess is the point.
Yeah.
They're not reaching anybody, right?
Well, this but this is where it comes down to. So even if that podcast has zero listeners, it could still, and crappy sound quality, it could still be of value to you if that person's going to become one of the three P's, right? So I've had people come to me and say, listen, Phil, I've done the Dr. Oz show. I reached 2.5 million people. I got no sales. What the hell am I doing wrong? But then I can introduce them to a podcast that's got 10 listeners and they do a $10,000 deal with the host. So essentially, think of it this way, right? If you were the... And this is what I like to get people to imagine, right? So you can follow along at home, boys and girls. So if you were the key person of influence in your industry, if you were the go-to person for what you do, most people think about getting there. I'd love to be number one. But what are you going to do when you get to number one? How does life change for you at that point? Well, let me tell you, somebody who has been number one in a number of industries, let me tell you, you get opportunities presented to you that nobody else knows about. You get to hear about things before they're even a business. They're still a concept. It's a friend of mine calls it the beer and pizza stage, where you invite people over for beer and pizza. You discuss an idea and start a business together. You get joint venture opportunities. You don't have to look for all your own customers because you have a referral network of people who are confident to refer business to you. You can raise your prices. You know, you can cherry pick the customers you want to work with. You no longer have to work with that customer who's a jerk just because you need cash. This is how it changes, right? So now you know you have the ability to pick up the phone and talk to anybody you want to, whether you know them or not, start a relationship with them and do business together. Now you have that ability because you're number one. Podcasting gives you not only a fast route to achieving that, but it gives you many of the same skills and resources. And if I call up Alex and say, hey, Alex, I'd like half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour of your time to discuss PR, he's going to say, sure, here's my invoice. Right. But if I say, can we have half an hour, 60 minutes on a podcast to talk about you and maybe explore if there's an opportunity for us to do business together? He's saying yes to that every single day of the week.
Absolutely.
That's and then great. Again, most people are like, well, how do I pitch myself onto a podcast? Well, it's because you're trying to pitch the audience. What you're thinking is they have an audience of 100,000 people that I want to speak to. So I'm going to say, hey, I'd be great for your show. They're going to realize that you've got nothing to give them in exchange for the fact that they're giving you an audience. And it all becomes, that's where the pay to play model came from, with people charging you to go on podcasts, which I hate, by the way, because if you're charging someone to come on a podcast, you've not understood the power of podcasting. But my point about this is this, right? If you approach it in a completely different manner, if you start inviting people onto your podcast that are your own customers to elevate them and get customer testimonials, people you want to learn from, so you invite them for like a free mentorship session, or people you want to onboard as a customer or a partner, your podcast is now producing you money. If when you a guest appear, they're always a purchaser, a partner, or a promoter, you will always win from your guest appearances. Now, over the last year, bearing in mind we've just come out of COVID and all that kind of crazy stuff as well, we've done circa $10 million US in additional sales from podcast relationships for us and our customers. At $0 in ad spend, $10 million made in creating of relationships.
Incredible. Incredible. Wow.
But like, I don't want to look, I don't want to play this down, because I'd love to sit here and say I'm a genius, right? But I'm not. The reality is, if you think back to business in the 80s, I'm not old enough to remember that. If you think back to business in the 80s, it all came down to, how powerful is your Rolodex? You know, companies would hire you. You would get a job that will feed your family and pay your mortgage and pay your holiday and your car on the power of your Rolodex. It was all about who you know, not what you know. And with technology, that seemed to disappear, because then it was all about, do you know how to create a Facebook tracking cookie that stalks my victims around the internet and keeps showing them my advert, right? And it became less about relationship building. Right. All I'm suggesting is that we use technology to its fullest potential, and I network internationally with the people that I want to work with. I own a PR firm in New York, and there's like 1,000 others, so I keep competing on price and having to write a tender every 5 minutes. Well, guess what? There's a hell of a lot less of them in Sydney and Melbourne, Australia, where they also need PR experts. And now I can meet those people on a podcast by getting them on, having a chat with them. They get excited that a top New York PR firm's taking care of them. So they pay you a premium, and you just get to avoid all of those people. You're not a tree. Move. And it's never been easier, you know?
You know, I'm thinking about that. And I think that the area where I've done well in podcasting is at least learning a lot of things and networking with people. And I have done on both shows received paying clients through either one of the shows. Okay.
Yep.
But it's not been my sole business model, and I've not thought about monetizing it that way. Mm. So that's what I have some work to do on that.
I teach people how to monetize on the way to being able to monetize. So look, full disclosure, when I had my sports podcast, all of our money was made through advertising and sponsorship. It was great. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was brilliant. We kept giving freebies and it was great. I felt like a hot chick. Right. Everyone was buying me drinks. No one ever buys me a drink. So, you know, it was like that. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. But we got there because we were talking about sports and we were one of the first in the market to do so. So it's really easy to grow an audience because there's a massive appetite for it. Now, I reckon you're going to struggle to find any niche in podcasting that doesn't have at least 10 competitors already. So if you think about it, unless you've got that time machine, the sponsorship and advertising route is kind of a bit crowded right now, and you're going to need to grow your audience before you can start charging that. So are you going to be one of these people that just makes 10 podcast episodes and goes, it's not making me any money. This is stupid. It's going to take me forever to build an audience. I can't be bothered with this. It's too much work. Or are you going to be the person that says, I couldn't care less if nobody was listening to this podcast because I'm winning from the relationship?
That is so true. But, you know, let's go back to vanity for a second. I mean, I know people, I actually have helped one way or another. I'm not taking any credit, but helped one way or another, help other podcasters get started, whether I helped promote them or gave them advice, et cetera. And a couple of them have got into the million download range. And it's very hard for me to look at that. Some, I mean, I'm happy for them, proud for them.
I get
that. But you're a little envious because you're like, I'm every bit as talented a podcaster as they are, but I just didn't hit yet, or I say yet. But I like what you're saying, because I've kind of said this about my other show in particular. Like there was a publicist got a hold of me and said, I'm hearing great things about your show. I'd like to get my author on. She's a New York Times bestseller, but I got to know how many downloads you get. I got to know all that. I said, well, I'm not even going to tell you that, because as soon as you hear the number, you're going to be like, not worth my time. But the thing you're missing, I told the publicist, it's quality, not quantity. You're going to get, I'll just throw a number out here. You may not get, you know, Joe Rogan, 100,000 listeners, you know, in general, who don't really care as much about books and all that. You could get about 1,000 people who are passionate about books and will be listening. So that's kind of what you're saying, I think, to a degree, right?
Oh, 100%. I always say it's much better to be famous for 500 of the right people than 5 million of the wrong people. You know, and most businesses, like, it's funny, isn't it? Like, it's like a sledgehammer to crack a nut kind of thing. And it doesn't work in any other form of society, but for some reason, as business, and particularly in podcasting, people seem to think that this is what we do. It's let's go bigger, right? Yeah. If 1 million people know who I am, then I'll surely be doing well for business. No, not necessarily. right. So, I mean, I'll give you a great example, right? Are you happy to talk about your business on the podcast? Because I don't want to ask you questions about customers and, you know, capacity and all that kind of stuff. Are you fully comfortable talking about that stuff?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So I won't ask you any private questions, but let's just say, you know, your main service that it is that you're looking to push out to customers and provide to them. Give me a ballpark figure of an amount of money, whether it's a monthly retainer, whether it's an annual thing. Give me an idea.
Oh, Oh, like, so for example, if I'm strategic communications consulting, right? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my minimum is around $4,000 to $5,000, maybe $6,000, just depends on the size of the enterprise per month for the retainer.
Okay. So we'll call it, let's go smack bang in the middle, make it easy maths and say 5K, right? Okay. So you're 5K. How many more 5K customers can you handle a month?
I could handle, I could handle at least 10 more.
Okay. 10. So it's 50 grand. And were you at full capacity last month or have you been able to handle 10 for a couple of months now?
It's been a couple of months for sure. COVID kind of laid me low. It's still clawing my way back.
Okay. So call it what? 6 months? You could have done another 10?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking 50 grand at 6 months. That's 300 grand loss.
Yeah.
That's 300 grand loss. Now, you need 10 of those customers per month to get that 50 back. Or a decent amount of partners who are referring you into business that gives you that 10. But either way, realistically, you know, let's call it 10 for 10. You need 10 people through the door, 10 conversations. I reckon you're good at what you do. So I reckon your conversion rate's what, 40, 50%, something like that? Half of the people you speak to about sign up? Yeah. Right. So you need to speak to 20 people per month to be able to make that happen.
Right.
I know this is the same in every single business. Trying to create 20 conversations with decision makers at the right level per month is pretty difficult.
Right.
Inviting 25 to 30 people at that level onto a podcast to talk about themselves, not difficult to get 20 conversations whatsoever.
That is absolutely right.
So now we look at it that way and we say, okay, so this podcast that you've been doing that you're wondering about changing the format for, maybe that format now becomes all about elevating your existing customers, inviting potential partners and inviting potential customers onto the podcast so that every month, let's do it in stages. Let's say this month together, let's say after this podcast, I mean, I don't know what the date is. Let's say it's the 5th. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the 5th. Fourth. I'm wishing my life away. It's the 4th, right? So let's say it's the 4th. Let's say you and I decide we're going to start working together after the 4th. Mm-hmm. My first goal with you for this month is to get another 5 customers signed up out of those 10 and create you 5 strategic partners that can each be referring a number of people to you each month. Next month, we're going to fill out the other 5 and we're going to get the 10 people that you need, right? Mm-hmm. And on top of that, we're going to add another 5 people doing strategic alliances and firing people over to you. So now you're looking at something else. By month 3, you and I are having a conversation to say, you're now at capacity. The skills that you need to develop right now are one-to-one consulting at a high level rate so that you can teach people how to do this and an annual group mastermind that you're going to charge $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 for to show people how to do this stuff for themselves. So you're charging a premium for the done with you. Yeah, you've got the done for you. You've got the done with you in the mentorship and it's the do it yourself in the mastermind where you come in, teach a load of people and off they go and do it themselves. So not only have we just made sure that you've now made that extra 300 grand every 6 months, we've now just added 2 new revenue trees onto what it is that you do on top of that, all by creating 20 conversations or so per month on podcasts.
Oh, you make it sound very simple. And actually,
it is very simple.
It is, isn't it?
Well, there's a blueprint that I've had to work on. When I left sport, you mentioned this. When I left sport, I was very analytical because that was the way my brain was. I mean, I think you have to be. It's that whole, you know, you can be a talent, but if you don't work hard, you remain a talent, right?
Yeah.
What's that saying as well? Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. So I knew I was talented, but I also knew there were hundreds of people just like me ready to take my spot. So I had to be really analytical as to what I was doing. That led to a surveying qualification. So I was doing projects from 500 million to a couple of, you know, 14, 15 billion, I think was the biggest deal we ever did. That was massive. Wow. Not for me, I might add. It wasn't my deal. But I was working in real estate construction and I was helping kind of generate those funds at a board level because I was very analytical. So when I've left, my attitude is if there isn't a blueprint that you can follow, it's not repeatable success. So my blueprint was first designed for me, then it was working. Then 6 years ago, people started to come to me and say, how did you get that TV show? How did you get that keynote speaking gig? How did you win that client? How did you get that partner? And I got so sick of saying I met them on a podcast that I started teaching people how to do it. Fast forward a year, I've now got more referred business than I know what I could do with because everybody that I taught is now making money with it and their friends are asking them. And Billionaires in Boxes was born. But whilst the formula has improved over the past 13 years, the basics remain the same. Like, there is a structure to the pre-call. There's a structure to the conversation itself. There's a structure to what you do afterwards with the after party. There's a structure to what you do with the content. And actually, funnily enough, between you and I, we've got a number of people who were originally customers and then later partners in the world of PR globally. Reason being, and I don't think this will come as a shock to anybody, companies are a bit funny about PR because they'll pay for it, right? And they'll pay for press coverage and attention and all this kind of stuff. And then right. as soon as they start working well, they wonder whether it has anything to do with the press, and they decide whether they want to stop. Or if they can't see any result from it, then they're like, well, this is a waste of time, so we need to stop. What we have been able to do is leverage all of that credibility, because we leverage the podcast for status and credibility. Right. You know, right. Visibility equals credibility. If they can see you, they want to do business with you. Nobody right. wants to be their industry's best kept secret. So what we did with the PR firms was show them how to win their retainers, yes, and show them how to do all that kind of great stuff, which was great. But then from their perspective, they were able to lengthen the lifetime value of a customer by tying in the media strategy with the business development strategy. So by being able to tie in the podcasts and the articles along with, right, now you've got a Forbes article and you've got five interviews with these top people, that now means we can go and have a conversation with that senior event organizer and see whether we can get you a keynote speaking gig on that big stage. It's all strategic. Every last bit of
it. Yeah. And I know we've gone over a little bit, folks, but this is, I'm just sitting here soaking it up like a sponge. Phil, this is fantastic stuff. What I'm going to ask you one more question, and then they're going to have to wrap, but and then we'll be sure to ask where people can learn more, et cetera. But
sure.
So Matchmaker, for example, I'm a founding member of that. It's been a blessing and a curse, though. Yeah. I've actually had to turn it off because I was getting, I've been booked since July. And I didn't say yes to everybody even. And I'm still yep. booked with at least one interview all the way through December of this year. But what I've seen is diminishing returns. I'm spending more time yep. with it. They're not a lot of folks are not my clients or yep. are going to be my clients. Oftentimes they're my competitors.
Yep.
Other PR people. So thoughts on that, if you want to be, is Matchmaker, or I don't mean to pick on, because James is a friend of mine and all that, I don't want to pick on Matchmaker, but just, are these kinds of things beneficial, or do you have to be very careful how you use them? Just a little bit on that. What are your thoughts on these kind of services?
I love James, actually. So James is about 30 minutes down the road from me. In fact, he was on my TV show last year, which is pretty fun. I like James. I knew him from his radio and pod.co days and before Matchmaker came. I mean, I love the fact that Matchmaker's taken off so much. But what I would say about things like Matchmaker and Podbooker are that they're only as good as you make them, right? Like garbage in, garbage out. So if you're saying yes to everybody, you're going to get a load of nonsense out. But if you're being really picky with it, you're going to be fine. It's kind of like saying, I've said yes to everybody on Tinder. Why aren't I married yet? And it's like, because you need to be a bit more targeted. You know, you can't just keep putting out.
But you might be having fun.
You're going to be having a lot of fun, but you're not going to be married, right? You might be down the STI clinic for all I know, but you're going to be busy. But Facebook, I mean, particularly for women listening to this, I mean, men as well, but to a certain extent, but certainly women, you know, if you're an attractive woman on Facebook, you're getting battered by people trying to send you friend requests that you've never heard of. You don't know who these people are. If you just accepted them all, what would the quality of your timeline be like? What would the quality of the messages that are taking up your time be like? They'd be shocking, right. wouldn't they? Whereas yeah. if you, that goes back to the, you should be famous for the 500 of the right people, not 5 million of the wrong people. Right. So for me, Matchmaker is a phenomenal tool when used properly. Most people, as I said, are thinking that the power of podcasting is in the audience. So the way that they think to use Matchmaker is say yes to everybody, spam a message to everybody, just get as many of these people lined up as humanly possible, because the more of them I have, the more people are going to listen. Well, here's one for you, and I'm not going to tell you who, because it will upset him, but I signed up a new client a few weeks ago, and he said, I'm now on my 200th episode. I said, okay. He went, I've got 186 subscribers. And he said, I'd have had more subscribers if I'd have just asked everybody that came onto the show to follow the show. Right. And I was like, okay. I said, so what are you going to do about it? He's like, I haven't got a clue. And I said, now let's flip that. let's imagine that those, you know, 300 episodes you've done were business development calls or client calls or relationship building with people in your industry. And I don't mean sleazy sales, by the way. I'm not talking about I'm going to hoodwink this person and try and sell to them. I'm saying, you know, Alex, looked at your profile, listened to your podcast, mate, really liked what it's all about. I'm wondering whether there's a way that we might even be able to help elevate each other's businesses. I imagine there'll be people in my phone book that'll be good for you and your phone book that'll be good for me, even if we don't want to do something directly. Tell you what, should we jump on a podcast and get to know each other a little bit better? Who's saying no to that?
Exactly. And there's a benefit for the listeners too, right? And that's great. I think the one thing that I've gained through these hundreds of hours of podcasting is the people who listen, there's that weird intimacy that you get from listening to a show on a regular basis. You get to know the people. Agreed. In fact, you start thinking you know them really well. You're their friend. And I've gotten that, and that's great. And again, it's gotten me opportunities. But Phil, you've opened my eyes that I really need to sharpen up what I'm doing and pay more attention. But I think I was going there already, but you've just kind of crystallized. Remember, I said earlier, I've got to change what's going on here. I cannot continue to do.
Yep.
And listeners, by the way, I love all of my guests. Well, most of my guests, they've been great. But Phil is right. I've got to focus more on using it to attract business. So there will be some changes being announced. But Phil, I appreciate that. I did do one thing on Matchmaker. They've got it now where only like pro members can connect with you if you tick that box.
Yeah.
To me, they've got a little more invested in it than just somebody who's an insurance salesman in Poughkeepsie, you know, who wants to talk and all that. And I'm very, very wary of anybody who just their pitch to talk on the show is about, it's like basically a commercial for them. You know, if you're not offering help, forget it. Yeah.
It's certainly not what I teach. My attitude right through my ethos and from what I teach is that when you're on podcast building relationships with people, of course, the audience are listening. So your job is to provide so much value that they say, if this is what I get for free, what do I get when I pay him?
You know, you also explode the really nasty stereotype that footballers aren't smart.
I didn't play long enough. There wasn't enough head injuries, clearly.
Oh, Phil Pelluggi, number one podcast publicist and top 100 podcaster globally, host of international hit TV show, keynote speaker, marketing, investment, technology guru, 10,000 plus hours of podcasting over a dozen years. He's grown and sold several businesses and podcast networks. And he's just given us, I think, the tip of the iceberg, folks, on how to monetize podcasting as a host and as a guest. Phil, how can people find out more about this?
Well, firstly, thank you very much for having me. I've really, really enjoyed being here. It's been a lot of fun. And I imagine we're going to have a number of conversations, you and I. For the audience, absolutely. Check out the show notes below. You will find a link to a free masterclass gift that I give, not to every podcast, but to podcasts that I like. It's about 30 minutes long. I think you just have to pop in your name and an email address, maybe, and the video will play. But it's essentially the very basics, like the idea behind this, full disclosure, because I'm a brutally honest guy, is if you're liking the sound of this and you want to work with me and you're thinking, I need to get a couple of sales through the door to be able to go and afford to work with them, watch the masterclass, figure out how to get a few more sales through the door, and we'll see you early next year.
Well, Phil, I can't see how anybody could fault you for that. I think that's great. I have learned so much. It's so great when I can finally, you know, and listeners, we had ups and downs trying to get Phil's schedule. One was I had an illness, and then he had an illness, and it's just, we finally got things back together. We're both in fine fettle at this point, I think, fingers crossed. But I'll tell you what, Phil Pelluggi, all the links will be in the show notes. And if for some reason it doesn't work on your podcast feed, go to prafterhours.com and I will have that link that Phil just mentioned and honored us with right there. Again, Phil, thank you so much for joining us here in the virtual lounge.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you know what that means? Looks like it's last call here at your virtual lounge for PR news, views, and interviews.
We'll keep it short and sweet. Just remind you, if you like the show, there's many ways you can help us keep it going, not the least among which is to rate this podcast. Simply go to the show notes at prafterhours.com or wherever you're getting this podcast and click on the link. ratethispodcast.com/after, and it will take you to Apple Podcasts and a couple other places very easily. One click, you write your review, it's done. Can't tell you enough how important it is to get ratings on those sites so that we can build our audience and keep bringing you the kind of information you need every week for your business. Also, don't forget, if you want to sponsor the show, give us a tip in the virtual tip jar or ask a question, there are links in the show notes. Well, I think it's time that I cleaned up and closed up for this edition of PR After Hours here on Anchor FM.